Welcome back to Stateside. Eminent domain. Those two words have been at the very heart of some highly emotional disputes over the years in our state. Go back to 1981. That's when 4,200 people, 140 businesses, 6 churches, and 1 hospital had to go to make way for the General Motors Hamtramck Assembly Plant, the one known as the Poletown Plant. More recent headlines have centered around Enbridge Energy, which must replace one of its key pipelines that runs through Lower Michigan. 285 miles of new pipeline needed to replace the one that ruptured and caused an oil spill in July 2010. Michigan Radio's Rebecca Williams reported on this during the fall on the Environment Report. Even though the oil that will eventually be carried through the pipeline is needed by many, there are some people who must shoulder an extra burden to make way for that new pipeline. Enbridge took homeowners to court, and although some people signed a contract with the company, Connie Watson and her husband Tom did not.
Enbridge had taken us to condemnation. Eminent domain is another word for it. And because we wouldn't sign their contract as it was, they had brought us to court to take the land.
The Watsons say they're frustrated with Enbridge because of experiences they've had with the company in the past. For 4 months, Enbridge repaired sections of the current pipeline running through the Watsons' backyard. Tom Watson says Enbridge workers brought in lights and worked in their yard with heavy equipment day and night.
Sounds like bomb going off about every hour or so, or, you know, like a bomb went off.
So much noise.
The Watsons say the work caused cracks in their foundation and other damage they say they have not been compensated for. The couple says they were not satisfied with the offers Enbridge made for their land for the new pipeline. Connie Watson says she feels like she's at the mercy of a company that's acted more like a bully than a responsible corporate neighbor.
It does make you feel sold out, doesn't it, Tommy? Yeah. Makes you feel sold out.
The lawyers for Enbridge declined to comment. The Gannett News Service reports Enbridge has taken more than 70 homeowners in Michigan to court to force them to give up some of their property. Carol Brimhall lives in Stockbridge on 38 acres.
Well, we tried to negotiate with Enbridge. We met 6 times with various attorneys.
But she says they were not satisfied with any offers. A judge in Ingham County recently ordered that Enbridge could expand its easement on her property. The judge also ordered the Brimhalls to accept around $11,000 in compensation from Enbridge.
The condemnation was devastating. We couldn't have been in that courtroom 5 minutes. So I thought the judge would maybe order mediation or say, let's give this another 2 weeks and you guys see if you can work it out. Anything, but she signed the order and we were done.
Brimhall says Enbridge crews cut down more than 100 large trees on her property last week. She says the work started the same day her mom was in the hospital, dying.
Oh, it's awful. They came through, and well, the day my mom was, Monday, and they cut my trees. I had called and emailed the agent. I said, please, give me a little bit of time here so my mom can pass away and I can be with her and not worry about what's going on. And they were out there first thing Monday morning.
Rebecca Williams of the Environment Report said Enbridge did not make anyone available for an interview for that story. It was her report that spurred us here at Stateside to want to take a closer look at eminent domain. Joining me now are two of the leading attorneys on both sides of this issue. Avery Williams has provided condemnation and land acquisition expertise on some of the big projects that have been important to the City of Detroit's growth and redevelopment. Comerica Park and Ford Field, the Waterfront Reclamation and Casino Development Project, just to name a few. And Alan Ackerman has been representing displaced and undercompensated people and businesses for over 30 years. Welcome to both of you. Now, those homeowners in Rebecca's report didn't want to sign contracts with Enbridge, and they were sued by the company. How often have both of you heard stories like these over the years in your work with eminent domain cases?
I think every major condemnation project in which I've been involved, particularly as it involves residential properties, generally has heart-wrenching stories that involve landowners. Mm-hmm. I think condemnors, and I do counsel all of my condemnor clients, the people who are acquiring property using the power of eminent domain, that it is an awesome power and that they have to be careful and that they should guard against trampling on or the perception of trampling on the rights of individuals as they go through the process, particularly as they're dealing with residential situations, because residential situations do often involve stories that go beyond just the property and the values, and you're looking at people's homes, their backyards, their memories, and you have to be careful in that. So every project has those kinds of stories, but I'm certain that I don't know who represented these homeowners.
Sure.
I don't even know if they were represented. I would be surprised that Mr. Ackerman or anyone else was actively involved in the process at that stage and would have allowed it to proceed in that way, because there are, in the process, protections that are built in to guard against simply trampling on their rights. And certainly, I think, as we go through this and explain the process a little better, it'll educate people as to what some of those protections might be to guard against situations that seem extreme.
Alan, were you surprised at what you heard in that story?
No, I wasn't. I was hoping that Avery would talk about the process because he represents the government. Because there is a statute that is there to protect the government, well, grant the government the right to condemn for public use, but grant property owners' rights. Was bothersome in Enbridge, and I did represent most of the home, a good chunk of the people, although not the people on this radio, on this cast. And the first problem that happened is that the Michigan Public Service Commission approved the project as a replacement project. Enbridge is building a new pipeline and is going to use the old pipeline, even though I don't think they have the authority. But what was really bad here is that the project was for transportation of crude oil, because there is a lot of crude oil in Canada, and we want to get it to Chicago and to the Marathon plant in southwest Detroit. And what happened here is they didn't negotiate simply to move crude oil, but they said they're going to use this pipe for movement of crude oil, petroleum, or any other product that they choose. It could be sewage. It could be nuclear waste. It could be anything. They didn't have the authority to do it. And what the Enbridge did is it made people, required them to settle, to sign off on these more harmful or dangerous things other than crude oil, and it was a real problem. They didn't have the authority to do it. We know they didn't have the authority to do it because a number of judges dismissed the condemnation complaints, requiring Enbridge to refile for about 15 owners in Oakland and to amend their filing in Livingston counties. So they didn't do it right.
If you're just joining us on Stateside, I'm Cynthia Canty, and we're discussing the really heavy and emotionally laden topic of eminent domain with attorneys Alan Ackerman and Avery Williams, who have been involved on both sides of the eminent domain issue for many, many years and have seen it all. If we want to talk about the big picture, most of us feel deep down inside, civilians, hey, I'm paying my mortgage, I'm paying my taxes, isn't this property mine? So how can my property be taken for public use? Don't I have protection?
Well, you did use, Cindy, two words that are important here, public use. And basically, the law of the state still remains that if there is a public use, although that definition has been narrowed, unfortunately for many condemning authorities, narrowed to a scope that I think may be too narrow at this point in time. It has gone, it has retrenched a lot. If there is a public use, the government has a right, after finding that there's a public use, basically determining that there is necessity for a project, to acquire private property for that use, so long as it pays just compensation. Mm-hmm. The process of determining just compensation usually involves having an appraiser, making a determination of value for the property. Then there is what's known as a good faith offer that goes to the property owner. That, I believe, may have been the contracts that some of the property owners were talking about. It's a good faith offer. The property owner isn't required to sign that good faith offer. They can't be coerced into signing that good faith offer. Normally, many of them who are a little more sophisticated engage lawyers and their own appraisers to actually assess whether the value that they see is fair to them and adequately compensates them for their property.
Which is totally understandable.
Which is understandable, and condemning authorities recognize that. The good condemning authorities hire acquisition agents and attorneys that can negotiate with the property owner, and at least at the beginning stages of the project, try and understand all of the issues and make sure that they make fair offers to eliminate problems like this. But at that good faith offer stage, there's a determination made by the property owner to accept or not accept. If they choose not to accept or there can't be a number negotiated, then and only then, having made a good faith offer, can the condemning authority go to court.
I see.
At that stage, they have the right to go to court. And even as they do that, there are still opportunities built into Michigan's condemnation legislation, the statutes themselves, that afford an enormous amount of protection for property owners in this state. They have the right to challenge the determination of public use, whether it was in fact a public use. They have the right to determine, to challenge in some cases even the determination of where the project was sited, although that is a much more difficult process. They also have the right to fight about whether the number, the determination of
for the acquiring agency.
Yes.
You know, I wish Avery did speak first, because now that fulfills what I was saying, is that you can't offer a contract on a good faith offer after appraising when you don't have an appraisal, which was done by Enbridge. And that's why these people are angry. Someone gets $12,000 an acre as an offer, a base offer. The person next door gets $18,000 for no reason. They just sort of got luck. It was like rolling dice, because they say, well, don't worry. If we're wrong, we'll pay you later. That's not what people are supposed to do. People don't want to be defendants in these lawsuits. A lot of the people signed off, not because they thought they were being fairly treated, but they didn't want to be in lawsuits. Other people signed off because they thought they were getting more than they deserved. So people can sign off for different reasons. The problem with Enbridge in this case is there was a lot of communication with tons of right-of-way agents, but they were making an offer based upon taking things that they had no right to take. They could put sewage in those pipelines if they wanted. And, you know, Enbridge is not a favored neighbor in this state because of what happened in Marshall, Michigan. And that's the underlying factual situation of why there's so much dispute. ITC is acquiring literally thousands of pieces of property in this state. There's not that kind of anger with ITC.
Now, who is ITC?
International Transmission Company.
Okay.
There's not that kind of anger. I think that do I think they do it right? I think that they may be wrong on what they've done in Huron and Sanilac counties with the putting in a huge transmission line. I think they're wrong in their offers. But there wasn't a male intent, and there wasn't something where they've been killing the cows already. It's not that kind of nastiness. And the electric companies have gotten in trouble in the past. Ask DTE and consumers how it was in the old days when they used to run roughshod over people. So it's a fine line between how do you make a good faith offer and negotiate fairly, and how do you not abuse people. But these people here are on what we call exurban. They're, Howell, Michigan is really not a suburb yet, but it's not agricultural. And the people are there because they want to be on 40 acres away from the Detroit area.
Right.
Now, one thing you've got to understand is public use is by private companies sometimes. Sometimes it's by the cities and the county. It can be by private companies. But there's an underlying reality that public uses are subject to some regulatory agent, whether it's a Michigan Public Service Commission or the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and they control the rates.
Okay.
And I agree with Alan. I think ultimately what drives the power of eminent domain is the determination of what is essential for government, what is essential for the public. I know that in the city of Detroit, it is my belief that you cannot do land acquisition of more than 5 to 10 acres in the city of Detroit anywhere without the power of eminent domain. Eventually, you're going to run into something that you can't get. I just don't know that the private market system is going to allow you to effectively assemble land or put together large parcels, even as we sit here and look at Detroit Works, for example, as an announced project, and the inability to effectively accomplish it and downsize the city or right-size the city, whatever the terminology is. I don't know if that can be accomplished without being able to make decisions as government as to why that's good and why certain people need to be relocated, but fairly compensated and moved in an orderly fashion that says we as government have decided spending X number of resources on maintaining a single home on three blocks that are a mile or half a mile long does not make sense.
We're on the same page. And what I'm sure that Avery Williams would tell you that this new constitutional amendment, which limited takings for private benefit, would not stop that process. The process of Detroit Works can continue on. If you have area blight clearance, you have a square mile with 14 houses on it, the city can't afford $7 yes. million dollars a year to maintain sewer and water
sure.
or police or fire. And you're going to have to take the 7 nice houses or 12 nice houses because there's literally thousands of vacant lots.
Now, I would suspect there are many times when a homeowner is just welcoming Avery with open arms, talk to me, because otherwise that house may never sell. Of course, there's the sentimental part where somebody says, this was my father's house and my grandfather's house. And I that has to be very painful for both of you handling that type of case.
Especially because they don't get compensated for it, because you can't quantify it in money. And the law says you don't get paid for sentimental value. You want to see someone who does it right? Marathon Oil. I thought that they'd be awful. They went down and voluntarily made offers because they knew they polluted the neighborhood. And they originally made offers saying, if we buy your house for a premium, you got to sign off any health claim. And they finally took that off. Hmm. Because if people got poisoned, they should get paid for it separately, because that has nothing to do with the value. But they're paying based upon 2007 values. Those homes there in that neighborhood were $55,000 to $75,000 in 2007. Because of the market, the houses are now worth 8 or 10. Would it be worth 15 or 18? Maybe, if there was no threat of Marathon and problem, maybe. But they're paying the $53,000 or $65,000. They're paying additional tax increases for buying a more expensive house. They did it right. Hmm. They get no emotion, no acquisition by condemnation, and they could have done it by condemnation. And that's the way to really do it right. And the city of Detroit, and on residential properties, does that. On the commercial, we get in a little bit of a brawl.
We've been speaking with attorneys Alan Ackerman and Avery Williams, both very, very intimately involved in eminent domain cases for many decades. And gentlemen, thanks for joining us on Stateside.
Thank you for having us.
Stateside, we want to hear from you. Have you or someone you know been affected by eminent domain? Tell us your story. You can send us an email to stateside@michiganradio.org. Find us on Facebook. Look for Stateside with Cynthia Canty, or on Twitter at Stateside Radio. Be sure to join us tomorrow. We're going to talk bankruptcy. With a severe financial crisis, there has been lots of discussion, lots of questions about what a possible bankruptcy for the city of Detroit would really look like. Could it happen? How would it work? And what would it mean for the state and for our region's economy? And did you know our state has been marketing itself for more than a century? We'll take a look back at pure Michigan 19th century style, those stories and much more on tomorrow's show. Stateside's executive producer is Zoe Clark. Stateside's engineered today by Mark Brush. Contributors are Ellie Billings, Ellen Cortezoa, Emily Fox, Cameron Stewart, and Mercedes Mejia. This program is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm Cynthia Canty. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow at 3:00.